My Mac Podcast number 147. Hey, what's up? Tim Robertson here with MyMac.com. It's kind of weird this week. I don't have Chad with me, so the entire show is recorded in kind of segments. We did a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I'm going to put the entire show together. And this is one of the last things I'm doing is the intro. It's kind of weird not working with Chad right here next to me. But, you know, Chad's on vacation, and work might kind of interfere with him doing the podcast for the foreseeable future, so we'll see what happens. One of the things that we did this week is an interview with Rogue Amoeba. Rogue Amoeba has some great products, and we talked to Paul Kafasis. I'm sure I just mispronounced that, but he gets the pronouncement right later in his interview. We're going to jump to that here in a little bit. And I also talked with Donnie Yankolo at MyMac from MyMac.com, Guy Searle at MyMac.com, and Bill Palmer. From iProng, which a lot of fun. Unfortunately, we had to use iChat. Skype is usually the program that we use to record all the conversations in. It's what we use to talk to each other, and it just wasn't working tonight. So it's an iChat night. Unfortunately, iChat just doesn't sound as good as Skype, but we'll have to live with it. First thing I wanted to do was say that in the chat with Guy, Bill, and Donnie, I mentioned Fenestration coming up on the show. From David Cohen. Unfortunately, that file was unavailable as I'm putting the show together, so we're going to have that next week. It's, you know, it sucks, but, you know, that's technology sometimes. He, David Cohen, is using the service YouSendIt, and it has a time delay, so if I don't pull that file when I'm supposed to before it expires, I can't get the file, and I never downloaded it, so it's my bad. Sorry about that, David, and I'm looking forward to actually putting that in the show and listening to it next week. Anyways, let's jump to a little bit of reader feedback. We've got something from Reb, so let's play that right now.
Hi, Tim and Chad at My Mac Podcast. I really would like to thank you guys for all the great work you and your staff does. Your reviews and commentary is absolutely incredible and spot on. I really appreciate it. I'd also like to send out a personal thanks to Guy Searle. His advice has been absolutely beneficial to the helping of me purchasing and all the tricks that he has shown me on the iMac. My question is, I have the 24-inch white iMac with the 2.16 Intel Core Duo processor with 2 gigs of memory, a 500-gig hard drive, and a 256 NVIDIA video card in it. Do you think it'll ever be possible with all the new upgrades with the Intel chips in the new iMacs and along with the video and hard drives, do you think we'll ever be able to upgrade the core parts of the iMac so we could have a better video card, better processor, like what's being sold in the new silver iMacs, which I really don't like. I'm sorry. I like my white one with the diffuse screen. So thanks a lot, guys, and I hope you guys can give me a good answer for this. Thanks a lot. Keep up all the great work. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Reb. Thanks for the feedback. You know, because the iMac is such a closed system, Apple really makes it very difficult to upgrade anything or even to get into it other than, you know, upgrading the RAM and that sort of thing. I would say no. My initial thought would be no. You know what? The problem really is cost. It's going to cost a lot of money to put a new video card in it, and it's also going to cost a lot of money to put a new processor in it. By the time you get done putting in a new video card, new CPU, man, it's probably going to be cheaper just to buy a brand new iMac. One of the problems with the iMacs in general, not just the newest ones, but going back to when the iMac first came out, with a built-in monitor, they tend to get better as time goes on. The new glass iMac with the glass screen, I've heard conflicting reports. Some people really like it. Some people really hate it. The only real reason to upgrade your iMac, that your current one, is because you like it so much. But, you know, if it's going to cost you an arm and a leg, you might as well get a brand new iMac with that great new screen. LCD monitors do tend to lose their brightness as time goes on. So a brand new iMac, say 3 years, 4 years down the road, when there's significant speed increases, because let's be honest, the new iMacs are not significantly faster at all than what you're using right now. It'd probably just be worth it just to buy a brand new one. Your screen's going to be better. It's going to be a faster machine. And you can either retire that current machine, sell it to somebody else, or use it as a server. There's all kinds of different things you can do with it. But actually upgrading the processor in an iMac, I would have to say no. I haven't taken one apart, nor have I really researched to see if how those CPUs are they socketed in like they are on the Mac Pros? Are they welded or not welded, soldered in? I really don't know. Some of the older Macs, it was very easy to upgrade the processor, say an older G5 or G4. Not so much the G5, but the G4 and the G3, super simple to upgrade the processors. They were on a daughter card. I do not believe the iMacs have the processor on a daughter card, thus it's going to make it very, very difficult. And I would say it's probably the same with the video card. I doubt if the video card is plugged into a socket in the iMac. It's probably more permanently attached. So, unfortunately, I don't think upgrading an iMac really is cost-effective for you by the time that the processor speeds have increased significantly where it's going to make sense. And then if the processor itself is going to be, say, $500-$600 for a 3 or 4 gigahertz model, that's half the price of a brand new iMac. And on top of that, because it's such a small enclosure in an iMac, if you get a significantly faster processor that generates more heat, even if it does use the same pin connectors as your current iMac's processor, it may simply run too hot in your current machine. The layout for the cooling probably wouldn't be correct, and it would probably cause more headaches than it's worth. So if you own an iMac like Reb does, don't ever really count on being able to upgrade the processor or the video card. Yes, you can upgrade the RAM. Yes, you can upgrade the hard drive, but that's pretty much it on those machines. I don't really see an aftermarket for upgrades for those. So hope that helped you out, Reb. Let's jump over to my interview with Paul first, and then after that we're going to jump into the chat with Donnie, Guy, and Bill Palmer. I'm here with Paul Kafasis. Is that right, Paul?
Kafasis. Close enough.
Kafasis.
There you go.
It's, my tongue doesn't want to wrap around it too easily. I don't know why. You guys make some great software at Rogue Amoeba. Let's talk about the software a little bit in the history of your company. But before we get to that, let's talk about Paul. How long have you been a Mac user, Paul?
About 20 years now.
20 years?
87, I think is right.
Was a Mac your first computer?
Yeah, I had a Mac Plus. No hard drive, dual floppy drives. Had to load the system on one floppy and use the external for anything else. Good
times. What'd you like about that computer the most when you first got it? What was it about it that attracted you to it?
Well, I was a young pup when I got that. My dad had actually gotten that for the family. And as I recall, I think he snuck it in the house under the idea that he could put educational software on there. I remember playing Math Blaster, if anybody remembers that.
Oh, I do. Math Blaster was a great. We had that in our senior high school. I don't remember, but Math Blaster was actually a program that we ran in a class. We had to use it, which right. Nowadays seems strange to use a computer game
as
part of teaching, but actually it works pretty well. So Math Blaster, was it an educational computer at home, or was that just an excuse?
You know, I mean, it wasn't, we weren't doing too much educational on it, but it was certainly, it led to my education as far as going into computer software, and I was a computer engineering major in college, so, you know, it certainly led to a future career.
Is your dad still alive?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's he think about what you're doing now? I mean, because you could really blame all this on him.
Right, absolutely. I'm not sure he quite understands everything we do now. I think we've sort of surpassed his knowledge as far as the software goes, and as far as sort of running a software company is sort of a new concept to people, that you can sell something where there's no physical product.
Right. It doesn't exist.
Exactly.
As far as, yeah.
Just selling electrons. I'm sure he understands it well enough and certainly talks to other people about it that he can sort of explain what it is, I think.
Is he on the computer still?
Oh, yeah. It just got him a new MacBook about 2-3 months ago. He's He actually had a couple Windows machines for a while, but once he retired, he decided he wanted to go back to the Mac, so he's using the Mac.
Now, when Rogue started, was it OS 9 or OS 10?
No, we've always been with OS 10. Rogue Amoeba got started just over 5 years ago. We had our fifth-year anniversary last... I'm looking at a calendar. It's about 5 days ago, whatever, the 30th, last Sunday.
Last Sunday. So you guys aren't too much older than Mac OS X itself. Not really.
Right, as far as
if you don't, the 10.0 doesn't really count. And a lot of people didn't use that. I did, but I'm insane.
As did
so.
I, and it was miserable. And
it was.
It wasn't. 10.1 was really the first usable version of OS X.
But when did you finally get rid of your classic?
I moved to 10 with 10.0, and I didn't use Classic. There just wasn't anything on there that I had to have. I certainly was missing plenty as far as, you know, programs that weren't available yet, but there wasn't anything that I absolutely had to have. So I'd say, what would that be? I guess about 2001 is when I moved over to OS X, and I've stuck with it since then.
Now, what do you do at Rogue?
My title's the CEO/lackey, which means I'm the boss here, but I'm also the low man. There's six people here, so it's we've got a decent sized company at this point. But I mean, as far as what the actual job description is, it's product management is probably the biggest aspect of it. Just sort of guiding the development of products, design.
So features. You still get your hands dirty in coding?
No. I don't do any of the coding here. We've got far more talented people than I am for application program. I do a little bit of web programming for us, but nothing too extensive. But definitely design and things like that, as well as marketing support, going on podcasts like this, you know, all sorts of things.
Yeah, you got to get the word out.
Yeah.
Now, you guys just had a really cool new program released, Radio Shift. I haven't used it yet. I want to. I've read all the PR, and I've read some early... I think John Gruber wrote something about it as well.
Yep.
But I've been reading about it. It looks like a really fantastic program. TiVo for the radio on your Mac. That's kind of the...
That's what a lot of people are saying. And I was actually having a conversation with Jason Snell of Macworld about this.
Uh-huh.
He's a TiVo user, and he was saying that this wasn't quite accurate. And it's not. But the basic idea is recording internet radio, which is something we've done before, but Radio Shift is designed to make this a whole lot simpler. The big aspect to this is that there's a built-in radio guide, so you can find stations and you can find programs just by searching this radio guide instead of searching the web, trying to find a streaming address, figuring everything out. So the idea is just to simplify the recording process of internet radio, of content from the BBC, NPR, local radio stations across the country, across the world that put out web streams. So the TiVo for radio analogy isn't quite accurate just yet, in that we don't do TiVo. I don't know if you've used a TiVo, but TiVo does.
Oh, yes.
It lets you pause live TV. It lets you rewind live TV, things like that, which we don't do just yet. It's something that we're, you know, planning for the future. But right now, the big deal here was being able to record with ease, which is also something that TiVo lets you do. So if you have a TiVo and you look at the TV guy, you can say, you know, I want The Simpsons at 8 o'clock, and just with one button, you can record that. And that's the same idea here. You can subscribe to shows with, you know, just one or two clicks.
But it's really bringing radio into the iPod universe. I mean, because I don't listen to the radio anymore. I've always got my iPod with me, but there are a lot of programs on the radio that I would like to listen to, but they're just not convenient for me when they're on.
Sure, absolutely. And over the past couple of years, a lot of programs have gone to podcasting, which is nice, in that you can get them on your iPod or you can get them on your computer when you want them. But there's still a whole lot of content out there that's not available as a podcast, and that's basically what this does. It lets your machine handle recording it, and then whenever you want to listen to it, you actually can, instead of when it's actually on the air. So yeah, instead of needing to be connected to a computer and there at the time when the stream is playing, Radio Shift takes care of that. It records it, and then you can put it on your iPod or listen to it in iTunes at your leisure.
Well, I've actually used one of your more mature programs, Audio Hijack Pro, to record audio off the internet. It does a lot more than that, but in fact, we're using it right now. I'm using Audio Hijack Pro to record you, and we record that, or we use that program every week when we record anything, when we talk to somebody that's not physically with Chad and I when we do the show. But I've used Audio Hijack Pro, and of course, I have to be right there at the same time. And with that, I use the Radio Shark from Griffin. Does Radio Shift work at all with the Griffin? What is that? The Radio Shark, I think it's called.
Yeah, we do have support for that. It's preliminary right now, just in that you can set up timed recording of radio programs, basically everything you can do in Audio Hijack Pro as far as that goes. In the future, the radio guide that we're using, it's a service provided by a company called Radio Time, and that guide has listings for AM, FM, as well as internet radio. So if you're in another city or if you just want to pick up, figure out what's on the radio near you, you can plug in, and in the future, you'll be able to see what's on the AM, FM, as well as on the internet. So yeah, there is support for the Radio Shark, and we'll be adding more features as far as that goes in the future.
So as far as the listing guide, you guys really don't have anything to do with that. You guys are kind of piggybacking on another company, and their program is making your program better, or do you think that kind of goes the other way?
Do they even have a
revenue stream for what they're providing?
Well, we're licensing the content from them.
So
we're paying for the guide content, and they license it to other companies as well. So it's their business model is organizing radio data, organizing internet radio and AM, FM terrestrial radio into a guide format and then licensing that to other companies. So we're a licensee of that, and it absolutely makes Radio Shift better, because it makes it so much easier to make these recordings. Basically, you look in this guide and it's a lot like looking in a TV guide where you can just say, you know, this is what's on and I want that and click one button and be able to record it. But as far as, you know, it's a complementary relationship in that, the guide's always being updated because this information changes so frequently.
Yeah.
There's 50,000 listings. It's not like TV where you get, you know, 50, 100 channels and they don't change very frequently. This changes daily, hourly even.
Wow.
So it's a little bit of a complementary relationship in that, our users can suggest updates, and also in the future there'll be, a lot of automated reporting. So if a stream is no longer working, Radio Shift will report back to them and say, hey, we've had a couple failures with this stream, and then their bots will take a look at it and check it out and suggest other streams and things like that. So it's something where hopefully the more users of the guide there are, the better it gets, because that information will flow back upwards and improve the guide. But absolutely having that guide data license from them is great for the product.
Another program that I've been using from you guys, Paul, is Make iPhone Ringtone, but unfortunately that doesn't work. There's huge controversy of what Apple did with the 1.1.1, that's a mouthful, update to the iPhone. It broke this. I thought this was a great program. I loved it. Do you guys see this working in the future? Do you think Apple's pretty much locked out third parties from the iPhone ringtone business?
Yeah, I'd definitely go with the latter there, that they've locked us out pretty well. This was something where, basically, with iTunes 7.4 and 7.4.1, there were a couple ways to get custom-made ringtones into iTunes and therefore onto the iPhone. And with iTunes 7.4.2, also a mouthful, they locked all those ways out. And then the iPhone OS update locked you out from the other end as well. So basically, Apple's doing everything they can to keep custom ringtones out. And this wasn't something we had spent a whole lot of time on. We basically just put a sort of a GUI interface on top of a couple tricks that were out there to make things a little bit simpler.
It did make it simple, I can tell you. I loved it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were giving it away for free, hopefully to entice people to check out our audio editor, but also just because it was something where it was too difficult to do, and this made it a little bit easier. But the day we actually put it up, and it was up for about a week, and we put it up actually on our freebie site as opposed to on our company's weblog. And about 6 hours later is when they came out with one of the updates that killed this.
Jeez.
And so it's pretty much the shortest product lifespan I've ever seen. But
yeah.
It's something where if somebody comes up with a way in that, you know, that we can take advantage of and that we can make a little bit simpler, then absolutely we'll update it. But it's something where we're not spending a whole lot of time on this just because it was something we gave away to try and make life a little bit simpler. And if Apple's going to really make life that difficult, we're not going to fight them on it on something that we're giving away for free, and it's not something where we're looking to make any money. So,
where'd the company name come from?
Rogue Amoeba?
Yeah. I mean, I love the name. It's a very strange name, and you have that right there in the logo, but, you know, a killer... I always thought it was a snowman, but obviously it's not a snowman, your character.
Right, it's an amoeba.
It's an amoeba, right. But I don't know why, I just kind of always glanced at it and thought snowman or bowling pin, one of the two.
The funny thing there is that we had plush toys manufactured, and when they came through customs, the box actually said stuffed snowmen. So I'm left to wonder what sort of snowmen they have in China where these were made. Because when you look at it, it's got a bandana, it's got sunglasses, it's got a gun. I don't really know that it really looks too much like a snowman. If you glance at it, I can certainly see that.
It's a very angry snowman.
Yeah, absolutely. He's looking for some vengeance, apparently.
Were you going to give those away at Macworld Expo or something?
Yeah, we've given them away, and we've actually got them on the site for sale if people are interested. It's just a little stuffed toy. It's they're pretty popular, actually. It's just an odd little thing to have, but if you like the software, instead of getting a T-shirt, we have T-shirts too, but instead of getting a T-shirt, you can get the stuffed toy. But as far as the question itself,
Rogue Amiibo, yeah, where did that name come from?
Right. I wish I had a better answer. I've got a list. I can't find it right now. I've got a list of all sorts of lies I could tell you, of joke answers. but we don't really have any good answers for this. It was something where we actually had a product. Our first product was available, was ready to go, rather. And we were setting up the company to actually be able to ship. And we couldn't decide on a name, and we were fighting for a couple weeks on various names, and we finally settled on Rogue Amoeba.
And isn't it crazy that the name is so difficult to come up with sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people don't, content creators don't realize how difficult it is to come up. Now, I had the same problem, by the way, back in 95 when I named our digital downloaded magazine. I had no idea what we were going to call it at the last second, since I was just making this whole thing on my Mac, but that's what I called it, and it kind of stuck.
Right.
But I just had to come up with a name once, as far as, you know, the web page and back then the downloadable e-zine. But you guys have to come up with a brand new name for every product. How do you guys brainstorm this, or is it kind of organic that the program does this? It's we're literally hijacking audio on a computer, so Audio Hijack.
Well, that was one we had Audio Hijack Pro. We had arguments about that as well. We actually developed that under another parent company and with the company we used to be at, and they didn't want to release it. They didn't like the technology. They didn't like the name. They didn't like anything about it, which is why we eventually left and started Rogue Amoeba. But so there was debate on that, on whether it was too violent sounding a name. And, you know, realistically, yeah, it is Audio Hijack. It is what it tells you what it's doing. It's grabbing audio and giving you control over it.
For those who don't know, It'll even pull the sound right off a DVD that's playing. I mean,
right.
It'll hijack just anything.
Exactly. But so it's something where we certainly could have used a different name that was equally descriptive. As far as coming up with these names, it's interesting. Sometimes I'm looking at our product page right now. Nicecast is a product we have that's built on top of software called Icecast, which lets you broadcast audio. And so that one's just sort of a little play on words, and we're pretty happy with that name.
Fission.
Airfoil. Yeah, Fission. Fission was one where we had two products in mind. The Fission's an audio editor that is really designed to let you break down audio, and that's what Fission is. So there's actually several jokes in there in that nuclear fission is breaking things down, but then biological fission happens with amoebas splitting into multiple parts. So there's all sorts of jokes there. But it's something where that was sort of the code name of that product, and it just sort of stuck and, you know, worked out decently well as far as the product name. But like I said, we had two different ideas there. We had Fission, which was for breaking audio down, and then Fusion, which was for creating audio, pulling it together. And that was going to be much sort of a higher end editor. If we ever do come out with that, we won't ever use that name because the name's far too similar.
But yeah, that's a little confusion there.
Exactly. It'd be far too confusing. But yeah, it's something where, you know, we're not paying anybody to come up with names or anything like that. There's a great article that I read every couple of years on, I think it's on Salon.com, about product naming companies and how Infinity paid like $35,000 to a product naming company to give them the letter Q. The Infinity Q is a car model, and some product naming company came up with that and got paid $35,000 to do it. We're not doing anything like that. It's a whole lot more organic than that. Just whatever we brainstorm and settle on, really.
So why audio? Almost all your products are related to audio.
Yeah.
Did you just see a need in the Macintosh community for audio type of programs, or is that more or less where your specialties lie?
No, it's not anywhere where we originally had any real specialty. Over, you know, 5 years, we certainly developed a pretty good specialty there. But it's definitely something that happened organically too. Audio Hijack was the first product we had that came out, and that was something that we thought fit a need. being able to record audio from other applications and manipulated audio. And off of that, our next product, Nicecast, came about because people wanted to broadcast audio. And so they looked to us and they said, oh, I want to broadcast audio from iTunes. You guys are able to record audio from iTunes. Maybe you can create something to let me broadcast it. And Airfoil, our product that works with the Airport Express, is the same way. People came to us and said, hey, we want to send audio from other sources to the Airport Express, and you guys are grabbing audio. So it's something where it just sort of happened in that we had a product that worked with audio, and people came to us with other ideas for audio and sort of looked to us for those solutions. And
so a lot of your product ideas come from your users.
Oh, absolutely. Basically, it's not always that they come to us and say, hey, I want a product that does X, but they'll say, I want to be able to, you know, have this feature in Audio Hijack Pro, or, you know, I want to be able to do X, Y, Z, and we'll say, well, that's not really a feature for this product, but that sounds like a pretty good idea for a new product. Fission is something, our audio editor is something that people sometimes wanted in Audio Hijack Pro, but we felt fit a lot better as a separate audio editor. But yeah, this is all stuff where people have come to us and said, you know, this is something that I want to be able to do. And you know, where we see there's a need and can hopefully fill it.
If you weren't working with or one of the owners of Rogue Amoeba, where would you be right now, Paul? I mean, would you be interested in working with Apple, a large company like that, or Microsoft, or another small software developer? Or do you think you'd even be in software development?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. That's an interesting question. Like I said, my degree was in computer engineering, so I think I'd be doing something with software. But originally, with computers in general, originally my plan was to go to law school and do IP law, intellectual property law, which, you know, having a technical background for that is good, and then you can work on hardware patents and software patents and things like that, and trademarks, and basically, you know, working with intellectual property. So that was sort of where I was headed until Rogue Amoeba really took off and, you know, gave me the opportunity to do something that I think is a whole lot more fun. But if Rogue Amoeba ever, you know, got sold or shut down, whatever that, whatever happened, I think I'd probably stick with software development and be...
Well, let's hope sold, if anything.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Ka-ching.
Let me be clear. I don't foresee any problems, but, if, you know, in a hypothetical, I think at this point I'd like to stick with software development. It's definitely something that I enjoy doing and, just sort of enjoy giving these products life and bringing them into the world and helping them develop.
Do you sell any products in a box, or is everything electronic?
Everything, right now everything's electronic, and when we got started, you know, that was 5 years ago, that was sort of in the back of our heads, you know, let's get a box product in the store, and you know, that's sort of the goal, but every year that makes less and less sense as more and more people switch to buying downloadable software. So it's something where, I don't know if you have any idea, but the margins on box software, on retail products in general are horrible compared to downloadable software.
Absolutely.
So that's something where we're not too interested in doing it, really. So yeah, everything's available for download from our site and then purchase right there, which works out pretty well because, like I say, more and more people are accustomed to doing that now. So it's not too much of an issue.
Has the iPod helped you guys?
You know, I can't say, you know, we see X number of sales to iPod users, but I can't imagine that it hasn't. The iPod, they sold what? Geez, I don't even know what the number is anymore. I think
a billion?
Hundreds of millions. it's hundreds of millions of them at least. So that's hundreds of millions of people or tens of millions of people using audio with their Mac. And so to have software that helps you record audio and helps you edit audio and basically helps you get audio on your Mac and manipulate audio, I think having audio be more and more popular on the Mac certainly has to have helped us.
Well, almost everybody listening, to this podcast obviously is probably an iPod user, and anybody listening, I know you guys like radio shows as much as you like podcasts. How could you not? Some of the best stuff out there is on the radio, and the best way to get it onto your iPod is going to be using Radio Shift Pro from Rogue Amoeba. It's only $32. Go up to rogueamoeba.com. I'll put a link on the website, and check out this program. Is there a trial on this at all, Paul?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a downloadable trial of all our software, actually. And basically, it's all the features are enabled, but we overlay noise on the audio after a certain amount of time. So you can get a sense for how it works, and you can try it out and make sure it does what you need. And then when you purchase it, then there won't be any noise overlaid in the future.
Thanks, Paul. We appreciate you coming on the show and talking about your program, your company, yourself. And hopefully we'll have you on next time you guys come out with a new program, because I really like your stuff. And we really appreciate you guys supporting the Macintosh community.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And we're joined today by Donnie Yankolo from MyMac.com. Hi, Donnie.
Hey, Tim.
It's been over 2 years since the last time you were on the show?
Something like that, or maybe a year, 9 months, up to 2 years, whatever.
Once again, we're joined by Guy Searle, the regular here on the show. How you doing, Guy?
I'm doing just fine. So happy.
And all the way from Hollywood, California, the star of iProng and iProng Radio, Bill Palmer.
Tim, I love you, man, but I told you, you got to start going through my agent to book this stuff, right?
I try to take back doors and get in there, and, you know, this way, you know, your agent can't look at the questions beforehand and prepare you, because we're really going to grill you on the show, you know?
And you can't get billed this way.
Tim is my agent, actually.
For those who listen every week, the audio quality obviously isn't quite as good as you're used to, and that's because we're using iChat, and the audio codecs in iChat isn't up to snuff, I don't think, at least for podcast standards. But we're having a lot of Skype problems, which is a program we usually use. So here we are recording with iChat, and actually, we've already been talking for 10 minutes. Unfortunately, the program I used to record it, Audio Hijack Pro, I must have not hit the right button, and I wasn't recording Bill, Guy, or Donnie. So I am this time.
Just a great big long track of you.
That's right, just me. All Tim, all the time.
It's Tim Radio.
So, I'm not going to go back over a lot of the stuff we already talked about because it kind of seems, I don't know, it doesn't feel authentic after we've already talked about it, even if it didn't record. Let's start with Donnie. Donnie, you just had your number 100th Maxpiration article published. 100 Maxpirations, some cartoons that you've done too. That's a lot of content over the last, 2.5 years?
I think 2 years.
Two years that you've been with. You know what? I've got the website up. I can click a couple buttons and find out exactly when your first article was published. La 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 la. And Donnie joined MyMac.com. He's got a lot of blog posts too.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez, Donnie, I got to scroll and scroll and scroll to get to the bottom. September 13th, 2005, Donnie joined MyMac.com. So it's been over 2 years.
Over 2 years, yeah.
That's a long time. You've written a lot more articles than most of the newer writers that we have. How did you get involved with MyMac to begin with? Was it listening to the podcast, or was it... Because, quite honestly, I've got a memory of a four-year-old. I can't remember anything. I really can't.
Could be Bruce. You could be a blonde from Florida.
Hey.
It was on the podcast. I think you asked for writers to write a how-to column. And I emailed in, said, I think I can do that. And we went from there. I think you called me in a couple of days or emailed me back. And
just kind of went from there.
The rest is history.
That's basically, an article a week?
Easily.
Yeah, about that. I wrote a bunch at one group, 5 to 10 at a time once in a while.
Donnie's actually most, in fact, nobody really knows this outside of a couple people at MyMac. Donnie's kind of my creative outlet on bouncing ideas off of. I want to design a new logo. Donnie will work with me for, well, I say Donnie will work with, Donnie will do all the work and then send it to me.
it only matters if you take the credit, Tim.
Yeah, that's true. And we'll send it to me, and then we'll kind of bat it back and forth a few times. And nobody ever sees that, you know. Nobody knows all the work that Donnie does behind the curtain as it is at MyMac. But somebody else that does a lot of, at least, blog posting is Bill Palmer. And number one, thanks for posting all those blogs up at MyMac, Bill. We really appreciate it.
Oh, sure, man. You know, originally I was just kind of reposting stuff from my own blog, but now it's like, sometimes I go and write it from my Mac first and then end up putting it on my own blog later. So it's nice to be able to just write about anything and not have to be on topic.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole purpose of our blog section. A lot of people have said, why do you guys got this political stuff up at a website about Macs? Or, you know,
why not?
Why not? You know, it's all about the creative outlet. I look at it anyways. In fact, Rich Lefko has a blog posted on the 4th of October about he finally touched an iTouch. And who else, other than myself, who else has got to play with an iTouch so far?
I've got to play with one a little bit at the Apple Store. And, the experience itself wasn't really that much different than playing with the iPhone, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah. Bill Palmer, you own one, correct?
Yeah, I got one 2 weeks before they started shipping them, which I don't know what Apple thinks they were doing, letting me buy it in a store before they ship the pre-orders. But anyway, I love it as an iPod. I think it's probably the best iPod. Puts that classic thing to shame. But as someone who's had an iPhone for 4 years, I think it sucks as an iPhone replacement. I think it's missing.
You mean 4 months?
Did I say 4 months?
No, you said 4 years.
I've been using an iPhone for 4 years. We did our 50th show, and I started our 50th anniversary, so I've been podcasting since 1957, so you can tell I have no brain left.
He's actually had it for 4 years. He has a time machine hidden in his basement.
That's right, but don't talk about it.
That's like Jonathan smart. Ive.
That was a very powerful NDA Bill was under there.
I just lost a job with someone. Thanks, Tim.
So, Bill, you went to the Podcast Expo last week, correct?
Yeah.
How was that?
You know, it's tough for me to answer that because we had a booth and then I was doing some panels to the left and right side of my booth. So I never really got more than about 10 feet away from my own booth while the hall was open.
That's actually
kind of good.
I can tell
you about the after parties. Can't tell you much about the sessions of the exhibit hall. So I heard a lot of good feedback from people. But, yeah, I think I slept 5 hours in 4 days. It's just starting to come back to me now.
I got a lot of people tried to contact me during the during that week thinking I was at that expo. Well, Tim, you've been podcasting longer than most people. Why aren't you there?
I'll tell you, Tim, it's almost a point of people look around and if a podcaster that is like on your level is not there, they kind of want to know why. You know, like Callie Lewis had a contagious disease, but everybody's saying, well, where's Leo Laporte? Nobody knows. You know, why is he not here? So it is almost kind of being like a Macworld thing in that community where if you're not there, people want to know what your excuse was.
Yeah.
Is Leo Laporte involved in podcasting?
Yeah, who?
Oh,
Leo what?
He's involved in netcasting, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How big is the expo?
How big?
Yeah.
Last year was 3,000 people. It looked bigger this year, but probably not more than 5. Exhibit hall was maybe half to a third of Macworld. So it's nowhere near on. I would guess that it's maybe what Macworld was in its third or fourth year. I wasn't around back then.
Well, I don't know. Is Macworld this the first one that you've been to, Bill, or have you gone to them before?
This is the third, and this is my second.
Okay.
Now
it's definitely growing fast, but I guess it started at zero a couple years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody did. A lot of people have asked me why I wasn't there, and the real reason is I don't really consider myself a podcaster. I'm a publisher at mymac.com. That's what I publish, and the podcast is only an extension of that. It's kind of like an article that we publish at mymac.com. Same thing with the video stuff that I've been doing lately. Did anybody watch that video?
I did.
Yeah, I saw it.
It's a video that I posted up on the 3rd of October. It's for a iPhone case. Do you got that iPhone case, by the way, Bill?
Yeah, I got that one all the way back in, shortly after it came out. I didn't get to watch your video yet, but I'm curious about your take on that product.
I like it. And for those who haven't watched the video, it's from Casemate. It's called the Signature Leather Case. It's for the iPhone, and I also look at the iPhone holster. I like the case itself. The problem is I don't use a belt clip for my iPhone or anything, really. They're just not comfortable to me. Plus, it's extremely geeky looking. And I have used them occasionally, but it's only when I'm reviewing something and I want to see what it's going to be like, and I'll use it for a couple days. But then, be it an iPod or an iPhone, they go back in my pocket. And the problem, Bill, is that when I pulled it out of my pocket, and I don't yank it out of my pocket, I just, pull it on my jeans like anybody else would, the front of the case actually snagged on, I don't know, something in my pocket, some cloth, and it bent it.
That's the case?
It actually deformed the top of the case. So
really?
I knocked it. I was going to give it almost a 4 out of 5. The only thing I don't like about it is because when the iPhone is in there, you can't put the iPhone on your dock, but that's more of a dock problem than the case itself. But because it deforms so easily, I knocked it down to a 4 out of 5. I like it. Don't get me wrong. They actually sent two.
But let me ask you this then, because I reviewed that really early, and I thought I put enough time into it, but then some people came back and said that the clip would come off too easily. It would, if you didn't tighten it, it would just spin off. And I went back and I couldn't get my unit to do what some people were saying theirs did. You never know how many or how few people are saying that. That's why I really wanted to watch your review and see if maybe that had happened to yours at the Velcro.
Well, I don't. Like I said, I don't use a clip very often. I didn't use it with this one at all. I was using the clip as part of the holster that this case actually slides into. The holster is like $25, and the case itself is $35. So at that point, I mean, that's a lot of money for something that's ostensibly to protect your iPhone.
Can I tell you a secret?
Sure.
It's probably a career ender, considering I review these cases for a living. When I'm not reviewing one, I don't use a case with my iPhone.
Really?
Yep.
I use one all the time.
And really?
This one has been the default, if you will, case that I've been using. And then I'll jump to one of the DLO-type cases or McAllie's, whatever it happens to be. And I'll use one of those for a day or two so I can do the review. But then I go back to this one most of the time.
Actually, I think that one, either that one or the PRT one was my default. They're so similar. I forget. I guess the one had the bell clip and the other didn't. But I think once I get through the batch of them, I thought, you know, let me just try it bareback. Because once I realized you can't really screw up the screen, as long as I don't put it in the same pocket with my car keys and my spare change.
Or in a microwave.
But I'm really, yeah. And I'm such a klutz. When I drop it, though, it always lands on the upper left-hand corner. And the cases don't really, like, protect that corner anyway, so...
You know, the funny thing is, I think it was Macworld. Somebody did a video where they actually took an iPhone, put it in a bag with a bunch of change and car keys, and was shaking the crap out of it to test to see how good the screen really is, if it's going to get all scratched up. And it didn't get scratched up at all.
Wow.
But yeah, nevertheless, I keep putting the plastic, the little clear plastic things over my screen. I spent $5.99 for mine, so.
I mean, it's like I would probably just put film on it permanently, but then oh, here's a case, and I got to take the film off to test the case, and, you know, I'm so lazy. I'm like, I'll just let it get beat up, since all I care about is the screen. I don't care if the bezel or the back scratches, and I don't think that's really happened either.
I was under the impression it doesn't work unless you, it's like direct contact. You can put a film on them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yep.
Well, the Casemate one comes with a film, right?
Yes.
If I'm remembering right.
Yeah. Yeah, Donnie, though, to answer your question, yes, you could still use the iTouch and the iPhone if there's a film over the glass.
Okay.
It still works just as well. In fact, I kind of forget that the clear plastic cover is even on it. It becomes almost invisible. Although I do get a couple bubbles at the corners, but, you know. Yeah,
Bill?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Bill if he's tried out a 6th-gen iPod Classic yet.
The Classic was the last one I bought, and if you've used the new Nano, the Classic is basically the exact same product with just a higher capacity. There's almost no difference in interface or anything.
Yeah, well, what I wanted to know, and maybe you can answer this, are you aware that the AV capabilities coming out of the dock connector doesn't work with older accessories?
Yeah, and that sucks, actually, because, see, I almost feel like, you know, people have been saying to me, oh, well, Apple's going to screw with the dock connector port. I don't want to buy any of those accessories. I'm going to get screwed like I did on FireWire. And I've been saying, well, that port has been licensed in this contract. It said that one you don't have to worry about. Well, now I kind of feel like an idiot because here's a product called iPod, half the stuff doesn't work right at the bottom dock connector, and then you get the iPod Touch, which is still called iPod, and I connect like a Griffin microphone thing, and it doesn't even register, and I'm like, damn, come on, Apple. You know, at least I thought you wouldn't screw the dock connector thing up.
Well, I know that when I first got the iPod Classic, my wife also got me the iPod AV kit so that we could, you know, just kind of plug it into the TV if there was something we wanted to watch on it. And audio was fine, but we got no video. And I started checking online and discovered that, you know, I wasn't the only one that had noticed this.
Why do you think they would do that? Because it seems almost like a slap in the face of both their third-party vendors and their current customers. If you've been buying iPods since, say, the third generation, and you've got a real nice AV dock that you use to watch video content on your television.
Yeah, or pictures or whatever.
Yeah, or whatever, wherever it happens to be. All of a sudden, physically, it looks like the same type of iPod. It doesn't work. Why would they do that? I can't figure out why they did
that.
Well,
there's a couple of theories. None of them are good. One is just flat-out incompetence. They were so focused on the phone and the touch that they didn't do the classic right. And I don't know yet. Maybe somebody else does, whether it can be fixed in software or whether it's like a hardware difference, because I don't really like getting to take them apart. The other thing, though, is that there's a thought that, you know, Apple really doesn't want you to buy the touch either. They want you to buy the iPhone, but they really, really don't want you to buy the classic. They'll take your money. But it's only around because they can't get a hard drive or 120 gigabytes flash into the Touch. So if you really want to think the most cynically, say that Apple tried to cripple the Classic just to give you another reason to look at some of the newer touchscreen stuff, which they'd really rather you buy into their futuristic stuff, I think.
Do you buy that?
Well, I don't know, because oddly enough, the people that work at the Apple store that I bought them both at had no idea about this until I brought the AV kit back.
Well, that's retail people, though, Guy. I mean, the retail people... yes, they're Apple employees, but you know, it's a totally different subset of Apple.
But isn't the Nano the same way? It's not just the Classic that does it.
I don't know, Bill.
Yeah, but the Nano, you'd expect that, I guess, compared to, you know, the old Nano didn't have video, so yeah. So you've got the new Nano, which is just like the Classic in that sense. But I don't think people are buying, like, upgrading from an old Nano to a new Nano, saying, "Oh, well, I'm going to do all this dock AV stuff," because they never really had that. It's people going from an old video to a Classic, which is a new video. Then, well, now I've lost something.
Yeah, but I would go, if I were to buy a new iPod tomorrow, I'd probably get a Nano instead of a Classic, and I have all the video accessories for my current iPod that wouldn't work anymore. So there's probably a bunch of people like me, too, that are going, might go backwards.
Yeah, it seems like Apple really kind of screwed the pooch on this one. Between that and the iPhone 1.1.1 update... Ew. Apple's got some bad PR right now. I think so. Anybody disagree?
Well, they kind of did the same thing when the Mini went to the Nano, and they had, remember that little connector next to the headphone jack?
Yep.
And they made all those accessories obsolete, so maybe down the road we'll find out there's a reason for it or something.
Well, and the reason for the Mini was money. They were licensing that bottom part, and they get the bottom port, and they get a cut from it. Anyone who's using that top port, they didn't get any money. So that's in my opinion, that's why they removed it, is to start getting more revenue.
Yeah, but I mean, people are paying Apple to create accessories to be official iPod partners to use the dock connector. And now all the accessories that they've built, or at least the video accessories that they've built, are useless.
Well, only the people that are using the logo made for iPod or works with iPod are actually paying Apple, Guy. I mean, you don't have to pay Apple to make an iPod accessory.
Well, that's true, but they're all equally screwed.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't see a benefit
screwed,
to
though?
Apple.
The companies aren't screwed, I don't think. We're screwed, but the companies are looking at that and saying, well, it's a little bad press for us, but we can blame Apple. Now we can sell everybody another one. I don't think the companies care at all.
Well, have you heard about any accessories that use the new dock connector that will output video? I haven't been able to find anything.
Well, no, because the video coming out of the new iPods, Guy, are coming out on a different pin, so they're not going to work.
Well, I know. I'm saying, has there been anything released that will work with them?
Well,
Apple makes one, don't they?
Yes.
You know, I'll tell you what I've been told unofficially by a vendor is, and if you've done this with the iPhone, you'll find that, like, almost nothing, not even the line out ports for your car work with the iPhone. I've been
actually,
told
that's
the iPhone.
Not true.
Well, so like someone
I've got the iCar Play in my car. I plug that into my iPhone, and it pops up and it says you're plugging into a iPod accessory that's not supported. Do you want to turn on airplane mode? And I say no. And I could go forward, back. I can't bring up playlists, but I can go forward, back. I could pause it. Everything that I pretty much want at the time, I literally have
it's
to go
working.
In and... Yeah, I have to go in and start playing whatever playlist that I want to be listening to. But, yeah, it works. I mean, in fact, and this kind of freaked me out. I was listening to, I don't even know, there was some music playing. And this was before the 1.1.1 update because I still had custom ringtones on my iPhone. And I had the Imperial March from Star Wars. That's what would play when my wife would call me. So, you know, I'm sitting in there listening to music, and I'm jamming out. And all of a sudden, it starts over my car stereo. Dun, 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 dun. And I'm thinking, what the hell is this song? And then I realized what was going on. But it literally sent the ringtone over the iCarPlay 2 as well, Bill. So that, I mean, it works.
That's really cool.
I was surprised.
Wow, and you say the iCar, you know, that's probably one I've got in a storage facility. I'll just have to go dig it out or something.
Of course, well, you're not really a... Well, I'm waiting for the iCarPlay 2 with the color screen and support for anything past 4.9 iTunes, such as podcasting. You can't navigate podcasts through it right now. It's a pretty old... I did a video review of it like 2-3 years ago. Well, but it's one iPod accessory that I use almost every single day, and it's followed me through two different vehicles now.
I wonder how they get around... Because what I was told by this nameless vendor is that the iPhone has an authentication chip in it to where if the company hasn't gone back to Apple and said, we want to pay even more money to get certified for made for iPhone, and then Apple will sell them that chip they can put inside their accessory, and supposedly that's why none of the current stuff works.
Well, my understanding was that a lot of the current stuff does work with the iPhone in limited capacity. Most of it will output audio. I don't think anything will output video, but I know most of them will output at least audio, and it does control pause, play, forward, and back.
Well, I hate to make excuses, but I actually haven't owned a car for the last 3 months. So.
Well, that's what I was going to say. just following you on Twitter, and I can see how much fun you've been having with your car lately.
I almost got it home today. I only had to walk one more mile. I'm trying to bring it home. It's like bringing home a fallen comrade, so at least I can have it at home until I get time to take it to the mechanic. This is how much, I'm in L.A. I swear I walk everywhere. Take the train. I don't drive. I bought a car just to go to the expo because it's 50 miles away.
Yeah, that was a while. You're not going to walk to that. Then again, you only slept for 5 hours. You could walk there and, you know, nap on the showroom floor. What's your plans this year for the Macworld Expo? Bill?
Well, you know, I mean, at a base, I'm going to go and then bring some people, and mainly we just, it's like, you know, like you and I have kicked around that, oh, we should do a booth or something.
Yeah.
And people at Podcast Expo, oh, you got a booth here. Well, no, because at Podcast Expo, there's like two companies that have iPod stuff. Then you go to Macworld, I think there was 75 that had iPod, and about half of them had new stuff. I didn't get to see the Mac stuff because I don't cover it. I love the Mac. I never even get to see that. So, like, if I can get maybe enough people or get my stuff together to where maybe I can do stuff on top of just being a journalist, I'll do it. But, you know, it may just be year 8 of just being a plain old journalist again.
How many people did we have covering the expo last year, Guy? 8, 9?
I think we had a total of 8 or 9, yeah, I would agree.
So something like a booth would work for us in that somebody could always be manning the booth while the other people are out interviewing and checking out products and that sort of thing. But I'm not there yet. I'm not quite sure if that's the route we're going to take because it's quite expensive to get a booth at Macworld.
And I'll tell you what, it's not just the booth itself. It's when you go to order the a chair or a garbage can and you realize you're paying more money to rent that stuff than you would pay to buy it in Target.
Well, and the union fees.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain, I guess just because of the nature of Podcast Expo, you can bring in a folding chair, and if they don't see it, they're not going to go bust into your booth and take it. I don't think you can do that at Macworld. So even if someone said, hey, here, Tim, here's a free booth. It's on us. We'll sponsor it. And you still got the furniture, which may cost more than the booth itself.
Yeah, which is crazy. But so I'm not convinced that that's really the way to go for us. We found that it's pretty easy to do some quick and dirty podcasts from the
press media room.
Yep.
Yeah.
In fact, you were on one of our podcasts in the media room, I think, weren't you, Bill?
No, we just stole his table, Tim.
Yeah, there were like a couple of friends. Every time I came back, there were more and more MyMac people at the table. You know, it inspired me, though, because you busted out the mic, you were passing around, you weren't worried about nothing or background noise. And it's like it kind of taught me that, hey, you know, you don't have to be like, you just do it like that. So I've been kind of doing some of that.
You know, I listened to that podcast. We actually did two from that room. The first one didn't come out very well, but the second one lasted about a half hour, and we had, maybe 8 or 9 people on the show, all MyMackers, and that's my favorite podcast, actually, other than the 100th episode. But that one is my favorite because it's just dynamic. It has energy to it. I really liked it.
Well, we had a lot of different perspectives from a lot of different people, which was nice. You know, we had people like my brother Larry, who, you know, hadn't ever done anything like this before. He's been a writer for a long time, but he certainly hadn't acted as a journalist. And he did that little video thing with you right there at the Fedoras.
Oh, that was funny. That was great.
He had so much to say, too.
Yeah. yeah, and then someone like Owen Rubin, who actually worked for Apple at one time, he was there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
His perspective on everything. It was a fun time. And I'm looking forward to the Macworld Expo again this year, if it all works out for me. I mean,
well, has there been any other commitments from any other MyMac people to go?
I think pretty much everybody who was there last year has said they're going to be there this year.
And they know about the plans on where to stay and everything?
No, because we don't have any plans yet, Guy.
Oh.
But that is something that we need to talk about.
Very soon.
Donnie, is the Macworld Expo in your future at all sometime?
Not unless it goes back to a summer expo. I was at the last New York one in, when they were in, what, June or July? But being a teacher that first week in January just doesn't work
tough,
out.
That's a tough gig.
That's too bad. We'd love to have you there. It's a lot of fun. It really inspires me during the week. And even as tired as I am when I get back from the Macworld Expo, man, I just want to get back into the... I want to write everything. I want to get podcasts done. I want to get video stuff done. And that lasts me until probably June.
Well, you know, we're kind of skirting around probably the most important news of the week.
Okay.
The new Zunes are out.
Yeah. Well, they're not out yet. They come out sometime this month, but I don't think they're out yet, are they?
Well, they announced them, I think, Wednesday. And they've got basically their two nano killers now that the nano is...
The scroll wheels, is the scroll wheel an actual scroll now?
From what I understand, it's got like a little scroll button on the top of the four position switch. So you're not, you know, it's still not like the click wheel, but you're still able to scroll relatively quickly.
So it's like an upside down archaic mouse?
Well, it's hard to say because...
Or is it like that little nub that's on some of those cheap IBM ThinkPads from the mid-80s? Remember that little red nub?
Oh, those were awful. I could never use one of those.
And they were, like, really hard. It was like a crusty pencil eraser stuck in there. They were horrible.
They had another name, but this is a family podcast.
I always call them the little red nub.
I would think Apple has a patent left and right on the scroll wheel.
I don't know if they have it on the scroll wheel. I know they got a lot of patents on the touchscreen.
Quick wheel. Yeah. If MS just goes ahead and puts like the equivalent of a small, like the kind of scroll wheel you'd have on a trackball, Apple can't do anything about that. You know, there's how many different companies out there making trackballs with scroll wheels?
Yeah, a lot.
Well, here's a question for you. I've been thinking about blogging this or doing a thumbnails on this. Have you ever seen a Zune in public besides in a store?
Nope, I've still never seen one.
No, in total of one. I've seen one.
You've seen one, Bill?
Yeah, I was on an airplane a couple of months ago. I mean, there were 50 or 100 iPods on the airplane in one Zune.
That's sad.
He obviously was not in first class.
Right. Well, neither was I, in fairness.
Oh. Okay.
It was Bill Gates himself.
Yeah. It was Ballmer.
You know, but let's as many things as Microsoft is doing bad right now, let's at least give them props for not giving up on the Zune and giving Apple much-needed competition. Because I think the entire iPod universe and iTunes itself really needs competition to stay competitive.
I think it's more competition for the companies that don't make iPods, because I don't think many people are going to switch from an iPod to a Zune. They might switch
Donnie, is because all the other MP3 players out there are also Microsoft customers because they're using Microsoft's technology in their music player or in the DRM itself, and it's some of them, like MTV, is actually partnering with Microsoft.
The Urge.
Are all these companies like SanDisk, is Microsoft competing with themselves? Are they killing their own market share in the MP3 market?
But SanDisk is killing the Zune. I think it's still like 9% to 2%. I always thought the Zune was just aimed at the Xbox people. That's why they charge points instead of cents or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if Microsoft really cares whether anyone outside of the Xbox crowd buys into the Zune or not.
But if Microsoft made the Xbox 360 somewhat compatible with an iPod. You could literally plug your iPod through the dock connector and a USB port into the Xbox 360 and listen to your music as long as it's not DRM'd. while you're playing games. The music in the game will actually be your iPod's music.
I think that's what caused your red rings of death, Tim.
No, that was probably when I was streaming music from my Mac to the Xbox 360, actually.
Isn't it cool to see Microsoft being in such a minority that they acknowledge Apple's majority by being compatible the same way Apple always has to acknowledge the Windows majority by being compatible?
Absolutely, and especially when you figure that the Xbox 360 was promoting iPod compatibility 3 years ago. That, oh, it's going to be compatible with the iPod. That's how long Apple's really dominated this market, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. Do you, Donnie, do you think the iTunes and iPods any trouble at all? Or
I don't see anything happening. I mean, Apple keeps innovating the iPod with more features. Now you have the Touch, and people are buying the iPhone. And I mean, iTunes is still the
dominant
and the easiest way to buy music. And, I mean, personally, I would never do a subscription model, and a lot of these other competitors are subscriptions.
Now, Bill and I were arguing, good-naturedly, of course, at MyMac.com about the Amazon MP3 store. I think it's a good idea. I think it's much-needed competition. The interface isn't as good as iTunes, obviously. It's web-based, and it's basically the same model as Amazon sells everything. But people are used to the way that Amazon displays items.
Well, I think it's going to be moderately
successful. And Bill, you disagreed with me.
Yeah, and it's funny. We did a panel on that at the expo, and you know, if any of you guys had been there, you would have been on it. But it was all the other Mac podcasters, and they're all with you. I mean, some of them, you know, will sort of agree with me on certain aspects of it. But yeah, I think I'm flying the flag alone on this one. It feels like the Mac Mini thing all over again. Tell you the truth.
Did they browbeat you, Bill?
I actually got up and I told a crowd full of podcasters that MP3 is a dead format, and no one threw anything at me.
Yeah, well, that's a start.
So they couldn't afford to buy the chairs.
I thought they were going to go take the free iPod stuff anyway and throw that at my head, but I got away with announcing that and no physical injury, so maybe there's hope.
I Apple needs a competition, and if anybody can give them a serious run for their money, it would be Amazon. Do I think it's an iTunes killer? No, but I'm also sick of the whole term iPod or iTunes killer. Why does something else have to succeed by killing iTunes?
The previous product.
Yeah. You know, it's a big universe. There's room for everybody. And the better that Amazon services their customers, us, the better it is for us. And it's better for Apple in a way, because Apple needs that competition to innovate.
Well, yeah, as far as that goes, you know, it's typically the same kind of stuff that you'll read on a lot of the social networking sites. Basically, that anything that the person that's writing about it doesn't use automatically sucks.
Yeah.
You know, there's no balance there. It's either you use everything I do or you're an idiot.
Well, that's punditry. I mean, that's been around forever, though. And it's more visible now because of blogs and the speed of the internet.
Well, and
the
anonymity of the internet as well leads to that.
Yes, I agree.
If you can call somebody an ass and, you know, not have somebody my size standing right in front of you, then, you know, yeah, they'll get away with it.
And, here's a question. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, just coming from the expo, it's so much harder to be uncivil to someone in person.
Absolutely.
People you talk to virtually all year, and then you see them, and you had maybe some, not that you had a fight, but, you know, like you had a disagreement on Amazon MP3 or something, and it's just, you kind of hug it out, you know, you can't really reject a person as being a person when they're standing in front of you.
Right, well, it's the face-to-face thing.
And it's not even just face-to-face, I've written articles in the past that's really upset some people, and I've got just the most vile hate email, and then I respond to it, not in the same hate-filled way, and they will respond to me back in a totally different, oh, wow, you know, it's like they didn't realize I was a real person until I responded. But then once I did, they totally changed their attitude. They're like, oh, yeah, well, you know. So I think once people realize that that's another person out there, attitudes change. But here's a question for – go ahead, Bill.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking too much. You're babbling.
No,
that's what I like about the Facebook and the Twitter stuff is, yeah, maybe it doesn't matter that I see, you know, Tim Robinson is eating a ham sandwich for dinner or something. It doesn't really help me professionally, but it does constantly remind me these people are human beings and that you know, their commentary is not who they are. Their company is not who they are. It just makes it a lot, when you do see them in person, yeah, okay, I know a few little random things about that person.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of why I use that stuff.
Well, the last thing before we wrap it up, because we've got some listener feedback that I need to respond to, and we also have a fenestration, plus our interview with Paul. Lately in the news, Apple's been taking a beating. The 1.1.1 iPhone update, like you were just talking about a little while ago, Guy, the not working with older iPod accessories for the
right.
Classic. Do you think there's a looming backlash against Apple and the success that they've enjoyed over the last 5 years with, I mean, the Mac market share is growing. There's no question about that anymore. It's more than doubled in the last 2 years. The way that the Macs are selling much better than they ever were, even with being compatible with Windows, people are buying Macs thinking that, well, it's still compatible with Windows, but they don't end up using Windows on it. Games are coming back on the Mac in a big way, thanks to EA, mostly. The iPod, the iPhone. Do you think there's a looming backlash against Apple? That's the question.
I think the backlash would mostly be from the people that would never use or buy Apple products in the first place. And, you know, they're sick and tired of seeing all the positive press that Apple's been getting. And they're just kind of, you know, rubbing their hands together with, you know, the snidely whiplash kind of laugh, thinking, ha, 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 we've got them now. You know, and you know, everything goes in cycles. If you think back 10 years, you couldn't read an article on Apple without beleaguered or, you know, soon to be doomed somewhere in there just before they said Apple computers. So I really don't worry about it too much. Apple makes mistakes just like any other company, and things like this weirdness with the iPod or the iPhone update that killed everybody's so-called, you know, unofficial third-party applications. You know, it all goes in cycles, and eventually, I've just found that from using Apple products that what good is going to be good, what's bad is going to be bad, and there are people who will complain about it no matter what happens.
Donnie?
I think the majority of people still like Apple. I don't think Apple's heading for a big downfall. I think it's the loud minority that with things like Dig and other sites like that, you know, you post one thing and the whole world sees it these days, and that's what gets the attention, the bad press, not the good press.
Yep. Bill?
I think Microsoft has proven you can have a reputation for being a little bit evil and still succeed. I think what's killing Microsoft is that it's not just their products are worse, it's that people are starting to realize that their products are laughably and pathetically worse than Apple's, and so they're finally starting to jump over. As long as Apple keeps making the better product, I think they can have that sort of evil reputation and still get away with it for better or worse. But I think what Apple really has to watch out for is in the past few years they started partnering with the record labels, the RIAA, the cell phone companies. Again, binding contracts with these companies that are pure evil and are profit mining corporations whose intent is to destroy the underlying goodness of what they're dealing with. And if Apple's going to have pure evil partners, they got to be really careful not to get converted into pure evil themselves.
Bill Palmer is from iProng. Check him out at iProng.com. He also posts blogs at MyMac.com. Guy is a regular here on the podcast. You got anything coming up in on the written side soon, Guy? Or
yeah, I'm still working on the iWeb tutorial. I've probably got about at least 4 to 5 submissions that'll be available for that. I'm up to almost 23 typewritten pages, not even counting the illustrations. So it's going to be a biggie, and it's just taken me some time to put the whole thing together. It's turned out to be a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be.
And Donnie, what's coming up from you?
Well, right now, a few more doing some short Mac explorations that'll be coming down the pike sometime in the near future. I'm also trying out Pixelmator, which has gotten a lot of
press lately.
Yeah, a lot of press. It's like a I would say it's a good competitor to Photoshop Elements and a little cheaper.
Well, so far, we've got a little wait for Photoshop Elements. I heard Microsoft says that that's not coming out until sometime late next year.
You mean Adobe?
Adobe, yes.
Microsoft bought Adobe? Crap.
Yes.
Ooh. Damn.
We're really screwed. the short and simple, is it a pretty nice program so far, Danny?
So far, I mean, it looks nice, works nice. It opens Photoshop files so far. We'll see. I'm going to keep trying it and see what happens.
Make sure you guys take a look at mymac.com for all the latest content that we provide. Video stuff, again, I'm going to start doing a lot of that. Donnie's got a review of the Keyspan Presentation Remote Pro. Check that out. And a lot of stuff up on the blog side, both Mac and non-Mac related content. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
No problem.
Great.
Fun.
Thanks. My pleasure.
We'll see somebody here again next week, and maybe Chad will be back. Will you be back again next week, Guy?
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm like a bad penny. I always turn up.
There's somebody, and as we've said in the past, we're going to get a lot more MyMackers on the show here, and we're going to do that here in the next couple months. So make sure you tune in. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.